Mitch, we've been saying it with Kellis now for a while. Bruce Weber always seems to have these Undertaker moments where he's down on the mat and then just pops up the second that you think he's dead and done. And I had already written it off for this year, but he made me look like a fool last night. I do think it's an Undertaker moment. Not that he was necessarily proverbially dead here. I think he was likely, just based on the way things have been going, what I've been hearing behind the scenes, I think he was likely going to be back anyway. I think this just helps give extra ammunition to those who may be inclined to want to bring him back next year. So it was fair to say that is an Undertaker moment. To go and beat Oklahoma last night, basically riding the hot hand of Mike McGurl. With just three shots, it totally changed everything, and all of a sudden, a loss is a win. And it's very appropriate that the Undertaker moment occurred in the way that it did. Like, so much about that last night was so very, very Bruce Weber and K-State. First of all, it came against Lon Kruger. And that has been one of the most incredible stats throughout Bruce Weber's entire tenure here, that he is 9-0 at home against Lon Kruger. First of all, that a coach has been there that long, a coach as successful as Lon has lost every single time he's come in here. He's brought a number one team in here. He's brought a top 10 team in here against arguably the worst K-State team that we've ever seen in our lifetimes. And it just has not mattered. The guy loses every single time he is here. So it very appropriately played to narrative and played to stereotype last night in the fact that Bruce won again. I'm not sure that I have a great theory for you, by the way, on why it is that that has happened and why it is that Oklahoma, for instance, this year can go just smash K-State and Norman and then just blow it when they come here. I had some more colorful phrases flying through my mind there about how to describe it, but I'll just say they blow it when they come here. Here's Bruce Weber's best guess at it.
I don't know what it is. You know, maybe it's just matchups, how we guard. There's certain, you know, there's guys, when I've come through the business, there's guys I you know, we've struggled beating. And then there's other people we beat, and it's like, how the heck can we beat them, but we can't beat them?
The only other thing I would have to offer is, like, I do think of Oklahoma as being finesse, as being soft. That's not really what they are this year. They're a pretty good defensive team. But I think of them as being finesse and soft, playing on the road in what's typically a decent to good environment in Bramlage. Would make sense to me, stand to reason that they would lose more often than they would win when they're actually here. But I don't think it explains the 9-0 thing. So that's really all I got as far as that goes. But it is so hellaciously appropriate that it's Lon that props Bruce up for his Undertaker moment. What was the guy you mentioned from K-State yesterday who's a jobber?
Mr. Hughes, Curtis Hughes, when he played at K-State.
Okay, so it's like Mr. Hughes.
Who feuded with the Undertaker.
Yeah, well, Mr. Hughes is Lon Kruger here. He's the jobber who is supposed to just go out there and make the Undertaker look good. Mr. Hughes, a.k.a. Lon, rolls into Bramlage, goes out there, and jobs it up so that Bruce can have his Undertaker moment and pop back up from the dead. Is that not a perfect analogy for what it was that we saw last night?
Well, that and, I mean, just a couple of years ago, it was Lon and Kruger that put Bruce and the Cats over to win the championship of the Big 12.
Correct. So what we have discovered here is that Lon Kruger is a jobber.
To K-State he is, yeah. To the Undertaker, yes.
Can you put that? We need to get back to actually using some of these polls. Can you put that up as a poll at the game, KMAN? Is Lon Kruger a jobber?
Well, when you have a third sidekick, you know, it's easier to tweet stuff out, you know.
Okay,
but
well,
I got you.
Yeah, please let's make that a poll. Is Lon Kruger a jobber? Because he clearly is. He clearly is. He helped his guy Bruce out last night. The other part of this that is just so immaculately appropriate is this stat that came out last night. And I actually saw it first from the Mitch Fortner content department. So congratulations on getting it out there before anybody else that I saw, Mitch. But last night, ESPN reported that K-State is the first team with a D2 loss and a regular season top 10 win since Wake Forest in 1993-94. That would make Tim Duncan a Wake Forest Demon Deacon the last time that happened, before an NBA Hall of Fame, no doubt, career. That's all happened in between the last time we saw a team with a D2 loss and a regular season top 10 win. And if I had held that up to you at the beginning of the season, would anybody have really been surprised? You shouldn't have been, because that is the most Bruce Weber stat ever. His whole tenure in Manhattan has been an enigma. And really, to an extent, it was the same way at Illinois also, although I think the ebbs and flows were a little less sharp and steep at Illinois as they have been at times here. But that's been his career here. High highs, low lows, not much in between. Either things are great or things are meltdown-worthy terrible, and sometimes that can change literally over the course of a weekend. Let's recap here. He has two Big 12 championships at K-State. That's pretty high highs. Nobody else in the Big 12 right now, not named Bill Self, has that on their resume. He has an Elite Eight here. He's been as far in the postseason as any coach since the 50s. As far as K-State has advanced in the NCAA tournament since the 50s. Bruce has those as high highs. He has also been a part of the worst loss ever. A loss that was debatably worse, said D2 loss against Fort Hays State. He had two massive upsets suffered in the first round of the NCAA tournament immediately after the high highs of the two Big 12 championships. And he also has been at the helm of the longest losing streak in a single season in school history. Also, twice having to blow the program up because of drama surrounding predominantly one player. Like, it is the high highs and the low lows. It is the Mamba. It is riding the freaking Mamba. My favorite roller coaster of my childhood. Shout out to Worlds of Fun. But that's...
You like the Boomerang?
Not as much.
That's my favorite.
Not as much. I like the big hill of the Mamba. But that's what Bruce is. It is a roller coaster, and now we're going back up, at least right now, a moderate hill. Because lifetime jobber Lon Kruger put Bruce over last night. But I mean, I about fell out of my chair seeing that, not because I thought, man, what a crazy stat. It's because I thought, of course it's been since Tim Duncan played at Wake Forest that somebody pulled off a Bruce Weber with losing to a D2 team and then upsetting a top 10 team.
All right, so, I mean, does this guarantee now that Nigel Pack is going to the league and he's going to win multiple NBA championships? Because Tim Duncan was a freshman that year, and then the next year, you know, Wake Forest, they went on to the NCAA tournament, won 20-plus games.
Well, I think Davion Bradford would be the more appropriate comparison there. If you're wanting to do that, like, because Davion actually plays more like a Tim Duncan.
Well, sure, I was just trying to pick out the top freshman.
Yeah.
What we would consider the top freshman, even though Davion was phenomenal last night.
Davion was very good. He was. The other part of this, Mitch, you pointed this stat out to me. There are so many great stats from last night that fit this whole central theme of we all should have seen this coming. We all should have seen this coming, that this would be Bruce Weber's Undertaker moment. Bruce has 7 of his top – he has 27 top 25 wins. 7 of them are against Oklahoma. 7 of them are against Oklahoma.
Not just Oklahoma, but ranked Oklahoma teams.
Well, of course, yeah, they're top 25 wins. So 7 of the 27 top 25 wins he has in his time at K-State are against Oklahoma.
I think it's just important to put out the emphasis on ranked Oklahoma, because it doesn't matter how good or bad Oklahoma is. They're usually good when they come to Manhattan, and Bruce will beat them.
It's just what he does. It's what he does, and it's what he did last night. We should not have been so blinded by our ignorance to have not seen this coming.
I'm shocked Mitch Palm didn't catch on, because Mitch Palm brought it up. Not only did Mitch Palm bring up that, yes, Lon Kruger coming into last night had lost 8 in a row in Manhattan, but myself, I'm undefeated. The Cats are undefeated when I'm on the PA or a PA spotter. I think Mitch Palm kind of had a bad moment last night or yesterday afternoon.
Well, so That means you played a role in this too. You're the jobber also. You and Lon Kruger, just a couple of jobbers helping get Bruce Weber over last night. I have something that I vehemently disagree with the audience and vehemently disagree with the responders to a Twitter poll I put out last night regarding K-State's dominance of the Oklahoma Sooners. I'll get to that next.
Tweet the game, KMAN, or call 53.
So here's something that I disagree with the majority of respondents quite a bit. 800 votes on a Twitter poll from last night. More unexpected to you this past year, K-State beating Oklahoma in football or K-State beating Oklahoma in basketball? 59% of you are prisoners of the moment. That's what this boils down to. 59% say the basketball win was more unexpected and surprising than the football win. Okay, people, let's not forget, I got roasted, laid to bear by the K-State social media and creative team because of how scared I was, cowering in fear underneath the very desk that I sit at right now when K-State went to Norman to go play that football game earlier this year. I was in a bad place thinking about that game and what might happen to the Cats. I was not in the same kind of place with Oklahoma. Now, in basketball last night, it's apples to oranges. I get it. Expectations are higher for the football team at that point. This is the end of a long, belabored basketball season. But Vegas would actually agree with me, so let's start there. Because Vegas would tell you that K-State should have had far more fear of Spencer Rattler in Oklahoma than Lon Kruger in Oklahoma. Because Vegas had K-State as damn near a 4-touchdown underdog going into that game in Norman in football. K-State was a 10-point underdog last night against the Sooners at Bramlage. We'll start with that. I think that is the easy place to start. But let's also consider the circumstances immediately preceding K-State going to play that game in Norman in football. You had the loss to Arkansas State, so everybody's trying to figure out what a COVID year is going to look like. Everybody's trying to figure out what this team is going to look like. And K-State loses to Arkansas State and loses because they get absolutely torched, just lit up by Jonathan Adams, a receiver, by the Arkansas State passing game. Arkansas State, no offense to Blake Anderson, solid program, but that's Arkansas State. And they tore K-State up with one receiver. You were then going to play Spencer Rattler off a dazzling debut. Lincoln Riley, who had just pumped up back-to-back Heisman finalists and a Heisman winner at quarterback. And now you have to go play them with members of your starting secondary out. That did not feel good. That did not feel in any way confident. And that led to an absolute shock of a win. An absolute shock of a win. I was surprised K-State won last night. I was shocked that K-State won that football game in Norman. Different levels. Much like I said earlier in the show, different levels of what Mike McGurl's performance was. I think it was great. I don't think it was all time. I think it was a very cool moment. I don't think it was legendary. Mitch and I are off on that, on how exactly we see what McGurl did last night. Just like I seem to be off with the lovely fine folks of Twitter on this one right here. Surprised by last night, shocked by the football win in Norman. I can't believe that that many people, I can't believe that the Hoops win won. I thought about not even putting the poll out because I thought everybody would be like, oh, John, you're stupid. It's obviously the football win. It's obviously the football win. I think the only thing it really proves is that everybody is just very much prisoner of the moment when it comes to these things and polls. And like everybody's feeling it last night off the W, riding the high of the win. Like you just remember it so closely there. And it's hard to think back, especially in COVID times. Hard to think back that far to September when K-State actually went and won that game against the Sooners. So, not saying you guys are dumb, but I'm saying you guys are wrong. That's how I'll phrase it. Now, I have a little bit more here on the Kansas football situation. So there are two things. If you are just joining us and you haven't heard the story about Les Miles, get to the front of my sheet here. I got to read through all my briefings about Les Miles and his troubles. 3 years before LSU fired him, head coach Les Miles weathered an internal investigation into allegations he sexually harassed and made sexist comments about student workers. USA Today sued LSU in January for a copy of the report. LSU refused to release it. A judge has indicated the bulk of it should be made public, but it will remain sealed until a March 30th trial to hear Miles and LSU's objections to the release. Kansas had no comment. Les Miles' attorney claimed that there was no wrongdoing found or corroborative evidence, when in fact that was not true, according to the USA Today. The investigation did not conclude the allegations were baseless. Rather, investigators determined Miles' conduct did not rise to the level of breaking the law. That's basically what we have here. Now, the speculation about... I've been actually very enthralled reading some amateur back and forth between attorneys and just random fans, the public at large here, about what may happen if Kansas can use this to fire Les Miles with cause and get out of damn near $10 million that they're going to owe him over the rest of the life of the contract. I would think that it's going to be a difficult thing to happen if this is something that happened at a previous job. And I also think it's a road Kansas probably wouldn't go down because they just went down it with David Beatty. That was the funny part to me, where I'm like reading this and I'm like, oh, I forgot about that. You can't. How is one supposed to keep their Kansas football scandals in order? How is one supposed to keep their Kansas athletics scandals in order these days? I can't keep track of it. We're having to keep in mind the FBI thing, which we just had an update last week on Bill Self when he was saying, like, hey, maybe it'll be wrapped up, like, in the summer. There's the FBI thing. David Beatty seems like it was so long ago that I can't even remember it, but there were all the embarrassing things that came out from the testimony that David Beatty gave there, including what we had earlier in the show about Jeff Long. Jeff Long making sexual remarks about an elderly female donor. Man, like, there is just so much going on there. But the Beatty part of it is important because they just tried to fire him with cause for the assistant coach deal, having an analyst actually out there technically coaching, trying to catch him on a technicality, a BS technicality, and it doesn't work. They wind up spending all these money on lawyers, and embarrassing things come out in a deposition about the school, and Jeff Long is left there to have ketchup all over his face. I like ketchup on my eggs, so I just assume that if Jeff Long has egg on his face, he also has ketchup on his face. Do they want to go pursue that again? Do they want to go pursue that with Les again? If it's already, like, iffy from my, again, very amateur legal analysis of this, if it's already very iffy on whether or not that would be something that could get them out of this contract, do you want to go through that process and have to deal with whatever might come out? Because the Kansas football program and the athletic department has already dealt with so much. If that turns into a lawsuit, now you're talking about billable hours again, and you're also talking about disgruntled coach, maybe disgruntled coaches, depending on who on the staff would be there. Jeff Long, who knows? I don't know anything about the man behind closed doors, but the only thing that I've seen here is that former athletic department's employees are claiming that he makes inflammatory sexual remarks about an elderly female donor and allegedly made a comment about wanting a hotel room adjacent to where a female school staffer was staying. And pardon me laughing, it's just so outrageous. Who else might have dirt on Jeff Long? Who else might have something that they just want to throw out there and see if it sticks? And like we're now at the point where there's so much that's been out there about Kansas and the athletic department and football that if you are somebody that's going down, you might fight dirty. You might start throwing accusations out there. You might start embellishing things. Like, and that's what Kansas has to protect themselves against and worry about right now, because they've painted themselves into a corner where nobody is... There's no reason to give them the benefit of the doubt on any of this stuff. There's no reason to believe them or give them the benefit of the doubt on any of this stuff if you are somebody that's been paying attention. And that, you know what, that's probably a little strong to say it that way, but I think like the inclination, let me say it that way, the inclination of most people is going to be to roll their eyes and not give Kansas the benefit of the doubt. Of course, legal system, innocent until proven guilty, all of that, using the word allegedly, but like, you're going to start losing the benefit of the doubt by most reasonable people when they see these things come up over and over again. So I don't think you'd want to put yourself through that process. I mean, I guess if they are to the point where they think Les really is as bad as we all think he is, maybe it would be worth the fight. I mean, maybe some more dirt coming out on Jeff Long is worth the fight if it's going to rid you of $10 million and less the dead weight pulling down your football program even more. And I think Jeff Long is like safe right now technically because of his contract, because he had that clause in his contract where if the school went under NCAA investigation, that it, like, he couldn't be fired. That's another thing I'm going to have to look up. I cannot imagine working in the Kansas athletic department or being somebody that covers the beat and trying to keep all this straight. And a lot of them just don't. I mean, like I said, there are Kansas beat guys out there, you can go look them all up on Twitter, that just didn't have anything about this today. It's just like every week there's something else, and they just don't. But it seems like a clown show. It seems like an absolute clown show. I put together a nice compilation here, and this is how we'll end the segment. Les Miles. 3 years before LSU fired him, head coach Les Miles weathered an internal investigation into allegations he sexually harassed and made sexist comments about student workers. In 2013, Miles was implicated in a scandal at Oklahoma State where female student hostesses reportedly lured football recruits to the school by having sex with them during campus visits. Other schools, including LSU, had hostess programs at the time, but Miles, who coached Oklahoma State from 01 to 04, played an unusually central role with Orange Pride, personally vetting the student applicants. Jeff Long from the Kansas City Star. Beatty also testified he heard Long make inappropriate and inflammatory sexual remarks about an elderly female donor to whom Long was prepared to make a generous ask financially. Beatty also testified Long made a comment about wanting a hotel room adjacent to where a female school staffer was staying, which Beatty in context understood to be a sexual remark. Puka Williams, best Kansas football player that we've seen in the time of both of those gentlemen, Jeff Long and Les Miles. According to a report from the Kansas City Star, the alleged 18-year-old female victim claims Williams punched her in the stomach and grabbed her by the throat. Police affidavit said the alleged victim had bruises on her arms and side. She also showed police text messages from Williams that admitted his guilt. Williams told police he pushed the woman when he saw her in a room with other guys. Kansas Athletics, ladies and gentlemen, give them a round of applause. And we'll get to the number one song of the day next. Yo, I'll tell you what I want, what I really, really want. So tell me what you want, what you really, really want. I'll tell you what I want, what I really, really want. So tell me what you want, what you really, really want. I wanna really, really, really wanna zig a zig. If you want my future. Now here's something I can get behind. Not that I love the song necessarily. Not that I listened to it a lot back when it was popping, as the kids would say. I don't think the kids really say that.
They still say it.
But it is very 90s, and that is what I appreciate about this. This is incredibly 90s, and it reminds me of my childhood when all was right in the world, when there were no troubles for anybody, when K-State football was kicking ass. Everything was right with the world in the 90s. What I would do to turn back the clock. Actually, I would like to be my age in the 90s. See what that would have been like. 31-year-old John in the 90s. Anyway, this song, of course, as I'm sure you all know, is Wannabe by the Spice Girls, which somehow spent 4 weeks at number one. And that is mildly shocking to me, that Wannabe by the Spice Girls spent 4 weeks at number one. But it did in 1997. The Spice Girls are a pop girl group formed in 1994 in London. I actually didn't know that it was London. The group is comprised of Melanie Brown, also known as Mel B, but it's not what you know her by. Her name is Scary Spice. That's Scary Spice. Melanie Chisholm, Mel C, was Sporty Spice. Emma Bunton was Baby Spice. Jerry Halliwell was Ginger Spice. And Victoria Beckham Posh Spice. Of course, married to David Beckham. I don't know why we got the real names, because what you need to know is they're scary, they're sporty, there's Baby, there's Ginger, and there's Posh. That's the Spice Girls. With their girl power mantra, the Spice Girls were pop culture icons of the 1990s. You're damn right about that. Damn right about that. And that was the era of the boy band, the girl band, like Britney Spears, Christina Aguilera. I told you, I watched the Britney Spears documentary, Framing Britney Spears, so I'm back on this late 90s, early 2000s nostalgia kick. I'm sorry, I like pop music still, but nothing like when the Backstreet Boys were out there competing with the Spice Girls and Britney Spears and Christina Aguilera for the top of the charts. You just won't convince me that there was any better time in music than the 90s. Yes, I said it. Spit out your coffee, spit out your water, whatever, your beer. Hopefully it's a beer. It's 5:43 by this point. Whatever you got to do. I said what I said and I meant it. Time called the Spice Girls arguably the most recognizable face in the mid-1990s celebration of youth culture in the UK. Yeah, I mean, probably so in the UK, I'd imagine. I was like, I don't know about the most recognizable face in the US, but I digress. The Spice Girls have sold 85 million records worldwide, making them the best-selling girl group of all time. They have 3 studio albums. I'm actually a little surprised that they had 3 studio albums. It felt like they were definitely just like a shooting star. Only 1 number one hit in the USA. Spice is the debut studio album. Okay, so here we get to know about the lyrics of the song. If you want to be my lover, you got to get with my friends. The lyrics, which address the value of female friendship over the heterosexual bond, became an iconic symbol of female empowerment and the most emblematic song of the group's girl power philosophy. A wannabe is a person who aspires to be somebody else, generally a celebrity, and imitates that person. The phrase has very little to do with the song, but makes a catchy title. Oh, okay, well, thanks for that. Wannabe reached number one in 35 countries. 35 countries? My God. Becoming one of the best-selling singles of all time and selling over 7 million copies worldwide. 7 million? Is that... See, I would have thought it would have been higher. Because back then, I mean, like, music numbers were actually higher than they are now. Where it's like now, with the streams, and I don't know, you sell a couple hundred thousand copies of an album, that's great. Anyway, in 2014, a study at the University of Amsterdam with the Museum of Science and Industry in Manchester found that Wannabe is the most recognizable and catchiest pop song of the last 60 years. Now that... That I think I'm going to disagree with, although I'm reading forward in this and there is some empirical evidence that is about to be thrown in my face. The study found that Wannabe's simple and relentless melody was key to its success. The Spice Girls' Earworm was named in an average of 2.29 seconds ahead of... Now this is fun. Ahead of Lou Bega's Mambo No. 5, which was recognized in an average of 2.48 seconds. Survivor came in third with Eye of the Tiger at 2.62 seconds. That, first of all, Mambo No. 5. How does Mambo No. 5, come on. Again, something I can appreciate, being nostalgic, waxing nostalgic here, but Mambo No. 5 does not belong in the same category as Eye of the Tiger or Wannabe with the Spice Girls in terms of being, like, instantly recognizable. Like, you hear that, meh, meh, and... Okay. Eye of the Tiger makes all the sense in the world. Like, all you hear is the beginning, like, dun, 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 dun. Like, who doesn't recognize that? I would love to know who the respondents were in this study. Because if you're taking people my age or younger, then I suppose Eye of the Tiger could slip through the cracks. But it really shouldn't. It really shouldn't. I would think Eye of the Tiger would be far more recognizable right away than Wannabe. But who am I to doubt the power of the Spice Girls? Wannabe was Spotify's most streamed 1990s song of 2020 by a female artist. I think most of Britney's stuff, yeah, like Baby One More Time was probably 98 or 99. So I guess that's outdueling Britney and some of the others there. I need to just take a back seat here and respect the Spice. I respect the Spice Girls. I respect this anthem. I wish it were still 1998. Ask Us Anything is next. Boy, do we have a good list of questions here. Every time I Google questions to ask your crush, funny questions to ask. Now I've evolved into funny questions to ask your crush. God damn, that thing takes forever now to flip over. I know nobody else can hear that, but when it kicks over, whatever that thing is, I hate it. Sitting there talking into the void where I can't hear it in my headset there for 5 seconds.
Yeah, it's only on the AM. It's when our transmitter goes to low power for the evening.
God. All right. We have some funny questions lined up here. I swear that I do still think that these are funny. This is funny questions to ask your crush. And the first question here is, how many licks does it take to get to the center of your heart? Now, I feel like that is very suggestive and very dangerous. So I am not going to answer that question. But I just wanted to point out that that was the first question here. That's the first. If you have a crush and you want to ask something funny, that is the first thing you should ask. So just take that, store it away, use it later, and you can thank me when you do. What was the other one that I just... Oh, yeah, okay, so what would you do? We go from that to just very deep. What would you do if you get a revelation that we're actually living in a computer simulation? Would it change anything in the way that you are living your life? I think if I found out we were living in a computer simulation, which is a fascinating Wikipedia rabbit hole to go down, by the way, I think the only thing that would change for me is that I think I would just take things slightly less seriously. I think that would help me take things slightly less seriously. I think I would still be pursuing most of the same things in life because it's like, even if it's a computer simulation, I mean, I'm still trying to, like, I guess do what I can to make my life better. Like, I still would like to enjoy the simulation while I can, while I'm actually here. But, you know, then it would be like, all right, well, I'm not going to worry so much about, like, this crazy thing that's happening over here. Like, you know, the Donald Trump presidency. Wow, that was a computer simulation. Okay, great. I'll take it a little bit less seriously. What qualities do you look for in a potential romantic partner? You know, I will just say this. I think something that I have found over the years that is invaluable is, like, an ability to take things seriously but not take yourself too seriously. That makes sense. That sounds, like, corny and, like, something out of a self-help book or something. But, like, you know, I want somebody that has a serious cause that they care about, something that they're passionate about, but also you can't just be taking everything too seriously. Also, like, let's have a damn sense of humor, okay? How many times did you look in a mirror today? Well, that's a very probing personal question. I look in a mirror, I'll be honest, I look in a mirror far too often. Okay, you start getting into fitness, you can be way too harsh with yourself, like, all the time, just evaluating constantly, like, all right, am I getting trimmer here? Am I getting leaner? How are the big old pythons looking today? Do I have a nice pump going today? I look in a mirror far too much is the answer there. And if you want to get real personal here right now, feeling a little bit flabby here lately. Can you fold a fitted sheet? I would say no. I don't know that I've ever tried to fold a fitted sheet. And it says in parentheses here, if the answer is yes, then she is a keeper. So I guess I'm not a keeper. That's too bad. Who is your first crush? I will tell you exactly who my first crush is. You all know who she is. It's because it was Jennifer Lopez. Jennifer Lopez was my first crush. And I believe that all stemmed from... I believe that all stemmed from the, would it have been Love Don't Cost a Thing video? I was in like sixth grade, I think, around the time that this happened. And I just remember being like, man, Jennifer Lopez, like, all of a sudden I am instantly aware of who you are. And I'm instantly aware of women in general. It was Jennifer Lopez was my introduction to the world as far as that goes. Who do you listen to more, your heart or your brain? I would say the unfortunate answer there is my brain. I should listen to my heart more often than my brain, but I am much more often listening to my brain. Here's a question that I don't... Why would this question be on the list? Can you imagine you have a crush and you're trying to just ask some questions, open up a nice dialogue, a nice conversation, and the question that you're going to ask is, have you ever dreamed about me? That's a bold move. Like, you don't need to be... What is the upside to asking that question? I guess in some magical world, if you think they've had this fantasy dream about you and you could be like hitting the jet, I mean, I guess, but I feel like if that's the case and you're already crushing on this person, like, you guys are going to get there eventually. You don't need to be speculating about a dream. And the downside is, she's going to be like, what are you doing? Like, why would you ask if I'm dreaming about you? And then the answer could just be like, no, why would I ever dream about you? Way too much downside to that one. But maybe that's where I'm supposed to listen to my heart. Maybe my heart's telling me I need to be asking that question.